Good day and welcome to the TGS third quarter 2014 earnings results presentation conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Robert Hobbs, CEO, and Christian Johansen, CFO. Please go ahead.
Hello, and welcome to TGS's third quarter 2014 conference call. I'm Robert Hobbs, and I'm CEO of TGS, and joining me on the call today is Christian Johansen, our CFO. Earlier today, we posted our third quarter earnings release and a recorded presentation of the results. I hope that all of you have had an opportunity to review this, to view the presentation. We'll now just give a brief summary of the main points of the presentation before opening the call to your questions. In the third quarter of 2014, TGS had total net revenues of $190 million U.S. dollars compared to $191 million in the same period 1 year ago. Q3 net late sales were $130 million, down 6% from Q3 2013, whereas net pre-funding revenues of $51 million were up 17% from Q3 of 2013. Pre-funding represented 55% of the company's $93 million operational multi-client investments during the quarter. Amortization of the multi-client library for Q3 amounted to $81 million, which corresponds to 45% of net multi-client revenues. As you may have noted, our sales from fully written-off vintages was at a record high 28% of our multi-client revenues this quarter. This would normally lead to a very low overall amortization rate. However, in light of the current market conditions characterized by lower oil prices and CapEx reductions from oil companies, we have taken a cautious look at our library. This has resulted in some adjustments and impairments totaling $25 million this quarter, mainly from the 2013 vintage. Although this vintage still has a remaining amortization lifetime of more than 3 years, we believe that this was a prudent approach given the market conditions. Proprietary revenues of $9 million were flat versus Q3 of 2013. Our resulting operating profit was $71 million, down from $80 million 1 year ago, and represents 38% of net revenues. Cash flow from operations was $184 million compared to $118 million in Q3 of 2013. And our closing cash position at the end of the quarter after share repurchases and dividend payments was $264 million. Earnings per share were 53 cents per share compared to 54 cents per share in Q3 of 2013. TGS had three 3D vessels and two 2D vessels operating under its control during the quarter. TGS was also a participant in two 2D marine joint venture projects, one control source electromagnetic joint venture project, one high-resolution P-cable marine joint venture project, and one full azimuth node joint venture project in the Gulf of Mexico. In North America, TGS continued acquisition of a 30,000-kilometer 2D survey off the coast of Newfoundland Labrador in partnership with PGS. This program is a continuation of a multi-year effort to supply much-needed seismic coverage in a very prospective region that has recently been opened to the industry for licensing. During the quarter, TGS commenced acquisition of the Snipe Phase 52 2D survey in the deepwater U.S. Gulf of Mexico, extending to the U.S.-Mexico boundary. Also in the U.S. Gulf of Mexico, TGS was very pleased to announce its first commercial full azimuth node, or FAN, project in collaboration with Fairfield Nodal. This project, called Nessie FAN, is in the South Timberlier area of the U.S. Gulf of Mexico shelf and will cover 54 OCS blocks. TGS also entered into an agreement with Fairfield Nodal to partner in another FAN project in the Eugene Island area of the U.S. Gulf of Mexico shelf. This project, which will cover 136 OCS blocks, has already been partially acquired and operations are scheduled to restart in November of 2014, continuing through the full year 2015. TGS continued its high level of activity in the Barents Sea during Q3, completing its 2D, 3D, P-cable, and CSEM projects. TGS expects to have this data available for the 23rd Norwegian licensing round. In Northeast Greenland, the company commenced the acquisition of a multi-year 2B program. During Q4, we've completed the 2014 acquisition season and have acquired over 5,600 kilometers of this 13,000-kilometer multi-year program. In the west of Shetlands area of the North Sea, TGS completed two 3D surveys in the Brendan Basin and Irwin Basin. And finally, TGS commenced and completed a 3D survey offshore Sierra Leone. Our backlog continues to be strong, and at the end of Q3, we had future customer commitments of $260 million, which is 46% higher than 1 year ago, and 16% and a 16% increase from last quarter. The increase from last quarter is mainly due to the customer commitments for an Australian 3D survey that we've previously announced called Nereides Phase 2 that we announced on July 31st earlier this year. Near-term uncertainty in exploration spending has been increased by negative oil price development, with the price of Brent dropping close to 25% during the last 4 months. It is likely that energy companies will continue their efforts to reduce capital expenditures and become more selective when prioritizing investments such as seismic programs. Certain important events are expected to occur that will allow TGS to achieve its 2014 guidance. The most important of these is the official announcement of the Norwegian 23rd round exploration blocks, which we expect to occur in mid-Q4. Despite this continued near-term uncertainty, TGS believes the long-term future of its business, and particularly the company's focus, asset-light, multi-client model is strong. Energy companies continue to demand higher-resolution subsurface images in mature basins and new regional data in frontier basins to guide their exploration efforts. TGS's customers see the economic value of the multi-client business model and are increasingly comfortable accessing their geoscience data through this method. TGS has secured the necessary onshore and offshore crew capacity for the remainder of 2014 under very favorable terms. This capacity will allow TGS to reach the top end of the guided investment range or even slightly higher than the guided investment range. And our full guidance for 2014 remains unchanged. Our investment range remains from $390 to $460 million. Our average pre-funding is in the range of 45 to 55% of investments. An average annualized multi-client amortization rate between the range of 40 and 46% of net revenues. And we have kept our guidance of net revenues in the range of $870 to $950 million, of which approximately 5% of those revenues will be from proprietary contract projects. At this time, we'll open the call for your questions. Ben, we'll let you give us the instructions for Q&A.
Thank you very much. So if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We're now going to take our first question from John Oylensen, company ABG. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. A couple of questions. First, on did I hear correct when you said you expect multi-client investments in 2014 to be the high end or even above the guidance of 390 to 460?
Yeah, that's true, John. It'll be at the highest end of that range or maybe even slightly above that.
All right. And could you give some indication of pre-funding for Q4, please?
We still feel very comfortable with the annualized guidance that we have for pre-funding of between 45 and 55%. So we're not going to guide on a quarterly basis on that, John, but we still feel very comfortable with the range.
Okay. And then the declaration in particular, the wide estimate survey that you are about to start in the Gulf of Mexico, there has been some talk in the market that Western GECO is overshooting in that survey. Is that something you can confirm?
We actually started our project, which actually started acquisition either yesterday or day before. We started that project actually after Western GECO had started theirs quite some time ago. It's a very different product. The technology is extremely different. We are overshooting one of our previous wide azimuth surveys, and overshooting it obliquely or 90 degrees to the previous data. We're using CGG's, a variant of CGG's stag size technology to get wide azimuth long offset signal into the Earth. And we're going to process our two data sets to get together to get long offset full azimuth data in the area. This is very different from the technology that Western GECO is using in the area. So the surveys themselves are not duplicative at all.
They don't think it will cannibalize, or the two of you will cannibalize each other, if you like.
No. The surveys are really dealing with I guess two imaging issues. We believe our technology that we're acquiring in the area is really capturing all the needs of our customers in the area. I would also point out too that the data is not being we're not shooting all of Western GECO's data there. In fact, over 50% probably of our survey is not coincident with theirs. So they don't cover exactly the same area.
Right. Did you ever consider doing the project together as you have done in the area already?
We talk on a periodic basis, but I can't speak specifically to this project, and the fact that we haven't partnered with them, should signal that it wasn't really important to us.
All right, and there's also talk that survey was very low pre-funding from your side. Is that correct?
No, we're quite happy with our situation there. I would also say that the survey that we're acquiring is an area that has very complex salt structures, so full azimuth is extremely important. What's also important is the long offset component, which is designed to image at very deep depths in the subsurface, where there's a play called the Norphlet play in the area, of which Shell has made popular through several discoveries. And we're really happy with our ability to use the stag size technology in the area to not only image around these complex salt features, but also this deep Jurassic Norphlet problem.
Okay. Then quickly on Q4, you write in your report that certain important events are expected to occur in Q4, allowing you to reach your guidance, and you highlight the announcement of the Norwegian 23rd round. If the Norwegian 23rd round announcement is delayed until 2015, does that mean that it's highly unlikely that you'll reach your guidance for the year? Does it hang on the Norwegian license now being announced?
Well, as you know, John, our late sales are oftentimes triggered by license round events and things like that. And so, and the Norwegian round has been important for TGS because we have extensive 3D investments that are coincident blocks that we think are going to be included. We do know of considerable sales that are going to be related to the round. And so timing obviously is important to us when we're looking to book those sales. I would say that certainly if the block announcements are delayed into early 2015, you would expect a certain degree of sales that would be pushed into 2015. So whereas we might underperform a little bit in Q4 to our expectations right now, because we definitely expect, we're pretty confident that the blocks are going to be announced by mid-November. But if for some reason they're not and it pushes into 2015, then we may be very pleasantly surprised by upside in our 2015 plans then.
Mm-hmm. And in regards to your 2015 plans, I know you haven't launched any guidance yet, but is it possible to give some indication about multi-client investment in volume versus dollars? We see that day rates are coming down for the vessel owners, and with prices 10 to 20% lower next year than they are this year, it seems a bit hard for you guys to grow your investment in U.S. dollar terms. Is it possible to give some indication of this, what you expect for next year, how this will play out for next year?
Yeah, we're in the middle of putting our budget together now, John, but I know you've followed us for long enough. You know that our business model is geared to be really good at taking advantage of markets like we're in right now. And you know, in a market that we're in right now, we can acquire a lot more data for the same dollar spent. And we look to take advantage of that, obviously, right? So I can't communicate or guide as to any dollar commitments next year. I would certainly, I guess I would say a couple of things. I would say that I wouldn't, if I were you, I wouldn't expect that we would be acquiring less volume, certainly, next year than maybe we did this year. We might even grow it, see an opportunity to grow it. I would also say that, and you can see from our backlog of $260 million at the end of Q3, we have quite high visibility going into next year when it comes to our investments. So we're quite pleased with that. We're quite comfortable with that. We will be coming out the second week of January. And communicating our guidance. Our plan is to hold a capital markets day, and we will be revealing our guidance for 2015 at that point.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks, John.
We're now going to take our next question from Christian Jensen, company Pareto Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi there. Just a question on the vintage mix here. It's good to see the old vintages being sold, but also that's sort of been the trend now for a few quarters. And given the current market conditions, how much are you sort of incentivizing sale of newer data by call it discounting older data?
I don't know if I quite understand your question about incentivizing new data.
The question is basically if you're, you know, to get sales into the books that you also offer, you know, obviously volume discounts and price discounts that in certain instances. You're playing on your library basically to and adding some perhaps some more older data to get the sales in.
Yeah, you know, we typically don't think of our business that way, really, Christian, in terms of vintages. We do, I mean, if we do ever discount data, it's usually based upon increased volumes. And so sometimes, yeah, we'll sell multiple data sets that might happen to fall in with certain vintages, but we never really sort of consciously discount one data set to trigger a sale in another data set. That's not really part of our sales process. Where our sales occur in terms of the vintages is probably one of the most difficult things for us to predict. And you're right, 28% is the highest it's ever been for fully written off surveys. I think that's probably a testament to just the quality of our data library in the pre-2010 vintages that still remains very relevant to things like license rounds around the world. In this quarter, it just happened to be quite high, and it's a hard thing to predict.
Yeah. And so from that, I take it that you're not sort of, if you compare, you know, Q3 this year with Q3 last year, or year to date for that matter, is that you're not, you know, more active in terms of discounting on volumes or any sort of fully incentivized sales activities around the globe.
No. I mean, we're always trying to get oil companies to buy more data, of course, right? But that hasn't really changed. We've always been doing business that way.
And on the Gulf of Mexico, you've now committed quite substantial amounts, both for Q4 and 2015. Is that sort of taking advantage of the pricing, because that's sort of over the past couple of years been an area where, let's say, client activity has been somewhat lower than previous years, and you seem to be sort of moving in the opposite direction.
One of the things we look at is acreage turnover, and if you look ahead to the years 2017 to 2019, there are about 3 years there where there is substantial acreage turnover that will be made, that will be available or turned over again and made available to exploration companies in the Gulf. And we have identified potential within the Mississippi Canyon region, which is our core area, and we're particularly suited to identify this potential because we have so much data in the area. Our geologists have identified the opportunity to acquire this this full azimuth data set utilizing the stag size technology to be able to not only image features around the complex salt in the in the area, but also there's this new Jurassic play. And the long offsets that we're acquiring there are particularly suited to help companies explore for the Norphlet in this deeper play. So it's you know, our strategy and our timing of acquiring the project in the Gulf is driven by customer interest, and that customer interest is being driven by a new play. And people are starting to look and starting to think about late 2016, 2017 to prepare for these rounds in which we're going to see a lot of acreage turnover. So that, those are really the kind of drivers. Now, I will say that, you know, we are seeing, you know, good conditions from our suppliers. You know, I think, you know, I think we've communicated that we're seeing favorable terms from suppliers. And that's always a benefit to TGS. But it's not, the timing of any individual project is not really governed by that.
Yeah. And just last question, if you could just talk a little bit around what your clients are telling you with regards to their current budget and what they expect going forward. Just looking at your late sales, it's down, you know, 5% this year. It seems as if you know, this downturn is not affecting you at all. Is your clients or your library resilience? Is it sort of client specific issues that sort of enables you to find pockets of cash and that going forward? How do you view that?
I think certainly we believe that the quality of our data library has allowed us to you know, sustain what has been a tough time for some. I think we have done a very good job of making sure that we have placed our library in some of the more attractive areas for oil companies to continue to explore, in which they're continuing to explore even in slower periods. It's too early right now. I mean, these oil companies aren't really coming out and communicating yet what their plans are for 2015. So it's too early to sort of comment on that and understand what's going to happen then. We do know, however, that oil companies are continuing to explore, and it's not something that they're turning off. They have to replace reserves. We do, you know, but they're being selective about where they do that. And I think as long as we continue to put our investments in the right place at the right time, which I think, you know, our results this year have demonstrated that we have done that correctly in the past years, I think we'll continue to be successful. It, you know, the whole key is focusing our efforts and making sure we put our investments in the right place.
Thanks.
We're now going to take our next question from Annie Wong, company UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Two questions from me, please. Can you, in terms of talking in your various regions, talk about if you've seen a change in the mix of the clients in terms of IOCs, independents, or perhaps non-oil and gas companies looking at your data? And then secondly, my question is just to, on your point about the accelerated write-down of your 2013 vintage. Is there anything specific that triggered that? And just want to make sure I have the logic correct. Was it because the sales of that certain data was trending below your forecast that caused you to write down the data?
I'll answer the first part of the question. I'll turn over the second part over to Christian. But I think in terms of our customer mix, we haven't seen a real big change, Amy, in that. At least near term, we haven't. I think over the past couple of years, we have, at least in the Gulf of Mexico, certainly, and to maybe a slightly lesser extent in offshore Norway. But in those two regions, we've have seen a rise in sales to smaller exploration-focused, private equity-backed, aggressive oil companies, and that's been actually a great thing for us. It's been, I think, if you had certainly we didn't predict this back in 2010 during, you know, post-Macondo, 2010-2011. We felt like the Gulf of Mexico, for example, was going to be a big boys turf, right, and we wouldn't see the new small exploration startups thrive. And fortunately, we were proven wrong. and at least our focus area of the Gulf of Mexico has been demonstrated to be an area in which small exploration-focused companies can thrive. And so they've been a great customer for us recently. We don't do a lot of business with national oil companies unless they look to sort of spread their wings outside of their home turf. Because they normally, you know, within their areas of business, they usually dominate, and so therefore those territories can sometimes not be very good multi-client markets. And so I'll just use for an example an area that's changing, which is Mexico. You know, we haven't had a business in Mexico until hopefully now, and so I would hope that soon we'd have Pemex as a customer as we start building a data library in Mexico. Which we certainly expect to do here in the next few years. So in that particular case, hopefully we'll see a new NOC join our customer list as we move forward. I'll turn it over to Christian for the question about the impairments that we took.
Thanks, Robert. Well, I think you saw that we had 28% of our sales from fully written off data, and obviously in a quarter like that, when you have such a high percentage of your sales from old data, you would expect to see an extraordinary low amortization rate. And that's obviously not the case this quarter, so we reported an amortization rate of 45%. And although we're very pleased with our revenues overall this quarter, we are certainly not immune to market fluctuations. We see that the market is getting tougher, we see that the oil price is under pressure, and we see some macro factors out there that obviously spread some uncertainty in the market. So what we have done this quarter is we've taken a very careful look at every single project in our portfolio which has disappointed somewhat in early stages in terms of sales. And then we have applied a higher amortization rate or some kind of an adjustment or impairment on some of those projects. And these projects happen to be mostly in the 2013 vintage. So you will see that vintage is heavily amortized this quarter. And we're not going to talk about specific regions, but that vintage is where you see most of the impairment. And I think that's been a very prudent approach given the market conditions. And I think that positions TGS very well for the future.
Just to follow up on both parts of the answers, thank you very much for them. On the first one, given that your customer base has somewhat shifted to a little bit more of the smaller independents, does that make is that give you a bit more worry about your revenue stream given the volatility? Whereas, you know, if you were exposed to bigger companies with bigger balance sheets, then maybe they would spend through the cycle more?
No, in fact, I think the other way around. I mean, when you look at some of the announcements now, and it may be because a lot of these big super majors and stuff are public oil companies, and so they're being a little bit more open about their plans. But I mean, you're seeing more of the announcements of cost reductions and that kind of thing from the majors, right, and super majors. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, we continue to see that new component of customer that we have is proving to be quite resilient, and we haven't seen much of a change.
Great. And Christian, on your response, just looking at your regional operating profits, though, Africa and Middle East seems is actually in quite a significant negative contribution. Can we just take the point, cue that that's where the most of the accelerated write-offs occurred?
Probably a good observation, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'll turn it over.
We're now going to take our next question from Christopher Moller-Loken from the company SD1. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. In terms of the fleet schedule, the investment level in third quarter was significantly higher than the fleet schedule implied. Was there anything in particular which caused investments to be relatively high in terms of days of 3D capacity in Q3?
Yes, Christopher. Part of the reason for that is that one of the surveys that we started or announced in Q3 and that you will see on the vessel schedule was a project that was already started at the time. And there was a one-off payment in order to take over that survey from the existing owner, and that explains part of the deviation in your numbers.
And was that the onshore survey?
That was an offshore survey, a marine survey.
Okay. Is that also fair then to say that, because looking on the fleet schedule for fourth quarter, I end up significantly above the guided range for 2014, although you highlight you'll probably be at top end of range. Could there be any some timing effect here so that parts of the investments in Q4 were already booked in Q3?
We wouldn't expect it to be significant, but maybe slightly above. So you may need to take a look at your assumptions in terms of what vessel rates we're paying.
In terms of the Norwegian 23rd round, so you're confident about an announcement mid-November, but unfortunately the Norwegian authorities have said that applications should be in second half 2015, which normally means that the announcement will come in June 15. What makes you confident that will come in November?
Well, I think the whole schedule, Christopher, as you know, has been stretched out. We do know, in talking to our customers, though, too, that they have exploration teams that are kind of sitting by waiting to start working for the round. You know, normally in a normal Norwegian round year, the APA round would be wrapped up, and many of those same geoscientists and teams and technicians would start working immediately after the APA round awards would start working, or after the APA round bids, I should say, would start working. The the blocks would be already announced for the exploration round. They start working for that, so bids can be turned into December. But we do know that there's a gap this year, and so I think there is the recognition that there needs to be a period of things to start moving. We know the data that has been acquired in the Southeast Barents, the 3D data, is being processed now, and some preliminary versions of that data are now being published and put out to interested oil companies. So we think that with all that included, that there's going to be a longer period of time between the former block announcements and the date in which bids are going to be turned in. A lot more data for oil companies to evaluate, so the government's going to allow a lot more time for that to happen.
Okay, thank you. In terms of the strong sales from the pre-2010 vintages, is it fair to assume that that was all partly coming from old 2D data shops in North America, given fairly strong sales of 2D data and fairly good contribution, as always, probably from NSA.
I think it was. I think you should assume that quite a bit of that was 3D as well. It was a mix.
Thank you.
We're now going to take our next question from Rob Pulain from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Amazingly enough, I do still have some questions. Just a couple, and we'll keep it to that. First of all, could you give us an idea about the demand on the U.S. land side or North American land side, given concerns over shale budgets, etc.? We've talked a lot about offshore, but it'd be interesting to hear the perspective there. And secondly, I think we've heard the answer to this many times in the past, but your vessel light business, if there was an opportunity for some very cheap but potentially very new vessels coming to the market, would you consider buying three or four of those, which would suit your needs going forward, or are you philosophically wedded to the vessel light business as you have been in the past? That's it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So for the first part of your question, the onshore question, I think the fact that we're starting five onshore projects in Q4 is a good indication that we're seeing good demand in onshore data, onshore 3D data for the shale plays. We see a lot of opportunity to grow in line with our overall business, but continue to grow our onshore business. We're seeing more and more evidence that onshore players are starting to recognize the value of seismic data for the shale plays. And as we grow our library, I think we're going to grow our late sales in this play along with the much as we do for the marine business. So we don't see much of a difference there, and continue to see healthy demand in the onshore. I think if we you should recognize that before we commit to an onshore investment, we typically look for pre-funding that's higher than average level for our overall portfolio. And the fact that we're starting five projects in Q4 should be an indication that we've been able to go out and attract some pretty good pre-funding for our onshore plays. The second part of your question is really easy to answer. I think where we recognize that business model that we're expert at and that we're that we are able to take advantage of now, and we've been able to take advantage of over the history of the company, is the one that wins, and particularly in the markets that we're in right now. And we also recognize that our business is cyclic. You can never say never, on things like that, but it certainly is not within TGS's plan to buy and own vessels. I think we've proven that that even in tight periods, we find ways to access the capacity that we need to be able to continue our investments. And I don't see any change in that going forward, Rob.
Okay, no, that makes a lot of sense. Good to hear. And sorry, just one very small follow-up. I promise, just one. And that is regarding the multi-client investment guidance. Having said it's going to be the top end of the range or above, why aren't you changing the range of guided investment?
I guess we could have changed the lower end of it, but I think that we're confident in that we're going to be certainly within the range, but again at the top end. It's already pretty. We're in Q4. We've already secured a significant amount. Well, really, pretty much the capacity we're going to be utilizing in Q4. There could be the odd additional capacity we would take. Also, there are potentially some timing concerns on projects. We have a very large project, actually two large projects we're going to be kicking off in the latter part of the fourth quarter in the Asia-Pacific region. And so there's a certain degree of uncertainty about when vessels show up on your project and start. And, of course, we recognize investment as a percent of completion. So we want to just make sure we're building in that sort of level of uncertainty, and that's why we haven't re-guided.
Thank you very much. Very clear.
We're now going to take our next question from Daniel Ravik from the company Handelsbanken. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. And just a very brief follow-up question to the pricing. I think you were kind enough to state in a Q2 presentation that you expect the contract pricing down some 10 to 15% this year. That was, however, of course, before oil prices started to fall. Any chance that you could give sort of an updated view of where you think contract prices will end up this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're certainly seeing a softer Q4. We're seeing not only favorable day rates, but we're seeing good contractual terms. We're able to push off a bit more risk onto our suppliers when we contract crews, land crews, and marine vessels. I think I'm not going to state right now a percentage and revise what we said previously, but I would just say that we're certainly in a soft period for in terms of day rates, and we're seeing very good day rates. And I would say, kind of going back to Rob's question previously, in terms of investment, I think we've been encouraged to continue growing our investment, because we are seeing pretty good terms out there. And And so therefore, when you see day rates that we're seeing plus contractual terms that we're seeing, we're able to the projects model out quite well. And when we're building a financial models for these investments, and so it's allowed us to continue to grow our investments in 2014.
All right, thank you.
And there are no further questions. I would like to turn the call back to the speaker for any additional or closing remarks.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Appreciate everybody taking time to listen to the call today. Look forward to talking with you again in early 2015. We will be delivering our guidance in the second week of January, and we'll be coming out with a formal announcement of the dates. That guidance will be in association with Capital Markets Day that we'll be holding at the time. And then we'll look forward to talking to you again in early February when we release our Q4 results. For 2014. So thank you very much.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect.